the real and the unreal blended in perfect harmony, in which I found no room for even the suspicion of surprise. On more than one occasion I remember reasoning with myself that it was more than like, it was surely a dream, from which I should presently awake to face the stern realities of my disappointed life with an additional pang added thereto by the recollection of its pleasant illusion. And I am still conscious of a shudder running through me at the thought of how I could sustain such a heavy blow as I needs must suffer. My companion noticed this and drew me somewhat closer to him, while he answered my thoughts in one of those semi-conscious reveries so characteristic of this life, and which have more of encouragement and suggestion in their tone than admonition. I caught more of the spirit of what he said than the letter, and as the whole was an impromptu, I could not ask him to repeat it to me, so that I am sensible of the injustice I do him in attempting to reproduce the lines which made such an impression upon me at the time, but the following will give a crude idea of what he said. All dreams are as real as the waking, then why should we spurn their delights? The soul climbs permissible heights, when sleep bids the heart pause its aching dash and gazes with eyes which are bright and strong on the promised home it will reach ere long. The soul is the man, and eternal, the body but lives for a day, 'tis of earth and must needs pass away, but the soul, in its visions diurnal, from the mountains of sleep looks over the river and hails the beloved in the land of forever. The child, and the man, and the maiden, have dreamed and will dream evermore. 'Tis the solace for all men, heart, sore, and true rest for the soul heavy, laden till in that last sleep, the body forsaking, the soul enters heaven, that dream without waking. I had neither opportunity nor disposition to reply, for with the end of his rhapsody, we paused, turned, and the scene which lay before me caused me to break away from the train of thought which had called forth such a pregnant lesson, while I was carried captive by the indescribable glories of the panorama towards which he waved his hand. As we stood upon the hillside from which we started, the one noticeable feature in the landscape, as I have said, was the radiation of the many-colored roads leading to the numerous cities now visible, but which then were hidden from our view. At our feet, running to the right and left, was one of darkest hue, crimson, black, having its termination round or underneath the hill, and down which I had watched that unfortunate and terrified woman pass from sight. This gloomy and foreboding path formed the basis or foundation of the scene, the next and each succeeding road assuming a lighter tint in almost imperceptible gradations, until the ray of purity up which we had travelled, formed a climax to the whole and capped the double prism as a crown. As I recalled that view in the light of the many explanations I had since received, I thought that the arrangement was a grand prophetic symbol of this happier life, showing the natural and uninterrupted progress which the soul was enabled to make from the far extremity of sin, to rest and perfect happiness in the time to come. And my heart was glad. Another thought recurred to me at this time, the question I had put to my guide respecting the pang that former view was calculated to cause in the breasts of those more unfortunate persons I had met with, and I realized the unspeakable mercy and love that had been exercised in the design displayed before me. The former prospect was but the reverse of the picture, which now I had rounded to gaze upon such glories whereof I had not seen, neither could it enter into the heart of man to conceive. If that sight would serve to add a pang to any soul as it rose again before the memory, I could well understand how this would overwhelm it with despair. Truly, the mercy of God is over all his works. Far, far away upon the western horizon, softened and warmed by the wide expanse which lay between us, hung the mists across the boundaries of the country. Their appearance now was not black and chill as when I last looked upon, but a soft, crimson hue suffusing them, made them to look like the rich tapestries the sun draws across the windows of the sky when the autumn day is closing, and the weary laborer hastens him homeward before the tempest, which he hears rumbling in the distance, overtakes him. Behind us, at an altitude my vision could not estimate or measure, over the mountain peaks, stream rays of glory, bathing and nourishing all that land. It was as though, while one invisible sun was setting in the distant west, from out the east and dawn another, the sun of righteousness, it might be, was rising from the bosom of the sea of love. Between this dawning and that sunset, what a multitude of weary souls were enjoying that rest upon which, like myself, so many had but recently entered. For the purpose of our view, we were standing upon the slope of some majestic mountain chain, the height of which defied my powers of computation. If I sought to speak, my eyes were blinded by the arc of light which beamed upon me and frustrated my quest, while far away, until my vision grew uncertain in the distance, I could see the range extend like the natural boundary line of two adjacent nations. The path which served as vantage ground for observation was like the even crest of a smaller range running from the base towards the brow of a glory-crowned and immeasurable hill behind me. In the distance lay a plain of apparently illimitable proportions, undulating and picturesque beyond description, in which hill and dale, lake and stream, terrace and plateau, park and pasture, grove and garden, city and homestead, palace and mansion, were so arranged and disposed as to contribute their own peculiar feature to the grandeur of the whole. Throughout that vast domain, each shrub and flower, each house and hill, each stream and lake, had its legitimate balance to maintain in the general harmony, and wonderfully beautiful was the effect produced in the accomplishment of the design. In hours of weariness and disconsolation in the olden life, I had tried to frame an outline ideal of what heaven must be, who had not? My highest conception had a background of disappointment and irritation. It was like a fascinating painting of some glorious sunset, entrancing with its beauty as you first beheld it, but as you gaze upon it, strange, weird, half visionary phantoms rise from out the canvas and cast their gloomy shadows like corpse mantles over the genius which had first so charmed us, phantoms of dissatisfaction, regret, and unreality. Everything upon the canvas is stiff, cold, lifeless. The drama has been caused to stop as the artist caught some situation most congenial, and of its poetry, no more will ever reach the ear of man than the irritating monotone on the lip when the command to stand was given. How can we know the sunset from such an inadequate presentment? The pygmy, momentary conception may be faithful, yea, perfect in its color and situation at the instant it was caught, but it needs the quick succession of the changing tints, the rolling and curving of the clouds, the rapid entrances and exits of the dying hero, day, accompanied by the soft sobbing and sighing of the breezes. It demands the presence indicated, and the increasing power portrayed, as step by step the somber night achieves his dark advantage, until at length he drowns the sun in the life, blood of his victim, and the black curtain falls over the tragic scene as twilight, no longer able to sustain the unequal conflict, closes her eye in death. All this, and more, we need before the artist can depict his sunset faithfully upon the canvas, and so of heaven we need still further countless complications and impossibilities before we can conceive a faint ideal of that which awaits us. My previous conceptions fell thus short of the reality of the scene which lay before me as I stood upon that mountainside, yet this was not heaven itself, but only one of the first halting places within the ranch of God's infinitude, where homeward bound souls could rest and refresh themselves in their migration from the earth, towards their Father's house of many mansions. I would pause here, nor further attempt the impossible, were it not for my yearning for the welfare of my brethren, who are still behind me, and cherish the many errors of the flesh in their ignorance of the life upon which I have entered. The consciousness of the inadequate powers I possess to convey a knowledge of the truth I have found, almost forbids me to proceed, but I will be content if only I can in some small measure make it known that this existence is not a vague and vapory state with nothing more substantial than a cloud in which to lay the foundations of our habitations. To us it is as real and tangible as the earth is to you, and, therefore, when I use the designations of beauty and grandeur which are familiar to the earth, it is not that I would indicate this life to be as crude and gross as that which lies behind me, but rather that the means are not available for me to convey a just conception of its realities any more than the artist has power to reproduce the sunset in all its sublimity and entirety. In those first moments of contemplation I became conscious of an enormous increase in my powers of sight, for as language fails me to express the quality of the scene unfolded to my view, so also am I powerless to convey an indication of the area over which that celestial panorama was unrolled, yet from the foreground to the far, away horizon I could plainly see in that haze, less atmosphere of eternity, not only the effects in aggregate but the component parts of each feature which in turn arrested my attention. Did I say it had its plains and streams? It were far more true to say my eye wandered over vast continents, fruitful and picturesque, each bounded by proportionate seas and oceans, from the poetic billows of which the sting of all destruction had been torn away. Mansion and palace gleamed resplendent in the shadowless sunlight, not cramped or circumscribed in detail or design, to suit the exigency of space or limit, not robbed of grace or beauty by the use of coarse material having the power to resist the storm and tempest as effectually as it can blast the architectural dream. What need of such restrictions in the domain of the infinite, that kingdom where they refuse to traffic in the merchandise of tempest or decay? Each habitation had its terraces and crescents, gardens and quadrangles, all its own in such noble and magnificent proportions that its vision may have made to sleeping Nimrod the first suggestion of the royal and stately Babylon. The spiritual quarries from which coral and marble, porphyry and alabaster, malachite and jasper had been cast out as coarse and valueless, furnished the substance for each edifice, while the garniture was worked in multiform mosaics of diamond and sapphire, carbuncle and beryl, pearl and ruby, amethyst and emerald, relieved by gems of tint and luster earth has never seen. The carvings were the work of sculptors who wore the rich mantle of perfect inspiration, a solitary thread of which had fired the ideality of Fides and Angelo. Egypt may righteously have gloried in the magnificence of her 100 gated Thebes, been proud of the unrivaled luxuries which found their home in the princely Memphis, extolled the unequaled perfumes compounded in the royal zone, but in her greatest glory she had never caught a glimpse of such palaces as these. The gardens of old Babylon were forgotten in the contemplation of such horticultural attainments, the statues of Apollo, Venus and Athens in the admiration of which the Greeks exhausted their enthusiasm, were figments not to be recalled in the presence of such grace and beauty, the rose of Sharon blanched its cheek in the face of such rich blossoms, and the aroma from the sweet incense of Jerusalem only became a type of the perfume wafted by the breezes from those trees which are robed in a living green without the experience of an autumn tint. The scene was animated by the multitude of persons who were everywhere moving to and fro, not with the hurried step of him who races to the gamble of the exchange, or the fear written upon the face of another who rushes to secure that skill which may save the life that is hanging in the balance. There was no visible apprehension lest each bush or tree should hide an enemy, or trembling dread of some watchful tyrant's frown. On the contrary, a serenity and leisure which took no cognizance of time or necessity seemed to sway an universal rule, while a quiet contentment defied all power to introduce disturbance. Peoples of every nationality intermingled without distinction, no cold formality, condescension, or patronage was visible amongst them, but rather a recognition that each possessed some power to augment the happiness of his fellow, and that the society of all was necessary for joy to reach its full ideal. It was a sacred, holy sight to gaze upon, and again, I asked myself what was the magic power which spread the hallowed feeling around us? I was unable to answer this until the soft winds swept past me and seemed to whisper, "They rest from their labor too, day, 'tis the lull when the storm is scarce o'er, they are joining the friends they had missed, whom they thought had been lost evermore. 'Tis the peace of reunion which crowns them, while their eyes are scarce dry from their sorrow, they have met and are resting too, day, and there never can come a to-morrow." My eye moistened, and I bowed my head in gratitude as I received the revelation, and, turning to my companion, I asked, "What is this place?" "The Mount of God, one of the vestibules of heaven," he answered. "If this is but a vestibule, what will the glory of the inner temple be?" "I cannot tell," was his modest reply, but it was filled with the music of such an intense longing as to waken echoes in my soul, the cadences of which are even yet vibrating within me. "Are there other entrances from the earth than this?" I asked. "Yes, many." "And are they all equal to this?" "Yes, They might rightly be called vestibules of rapture, I continued, but there is one thing that very much surprises me. And what is that, my brother? He asked. To see the distinctive color and feature of each nationality is retained here. The erroneous idea that this will not be so is very prevalent on the earth, and yet it should not be, especially with those who make such a study of the Bible as your country professes to do. Does not John tell you that in one of his visions he saw a great multitude which no man could number, of all nations, and kindreds, and people and tongues? Now, seeing that color and feature could be his only distinguishing marks, why should you be surprised to find his vision verified? He smiled as he saw my confusion, as the truth of his broader and more literal rendering of the vision made me to recognize a phase of revelation from which my eyes had hitherto been held, and then continued, all these mistaken ideas are due to the inconsistent methods which men apply to the reading of their sacred books, fact and metaphor, parable and history are so continually confounded for the purpose of establishing some very unimportant point, that in the minds of many persons it becomes at length an utter impossibility to distinguish the one from the other, while undue emphasis placed upon some sentences, irrespective of their connection, prevents the great majority of mankind from knowing really what are the plain teachings of the books they hold in such superstitious reverence. I noticed your astonishment just now when I told you that Mahanin is a ruler here. It was a look of incredulity, as if you thought I had spoken blasphemy. That was because I had no idea of there being any other power here than God. Neither is there, but that power is exercised through duly appointed ministers. The same thought applied to reading your Bible, as you have been accustomed to give to any other book, would have prepared you for this. Jesus, in the parable of the talents, clearly gave you to understand that the wise servants should be made rulers over 2, 5, or 10 cities. He promised his disciples that they should sit as judges, and his followers look forward to the time when they shall reign with him. Why, then, should you be surprised to find that what he said was true, and that such offices really are in existence here? Another common error has reference to the character and nature of this land, and our methods of life. Jesus assures his disciples that there were many mansions in his Father's house. Ezekiel and John saw a city. Pilgrims are reminded that on earth they have no continuing city, but are to seek one yet to come, whose builder and maker is God. Congregations are frequently singing of Jerusalem, when shall these eyes thine heaven, built walls and pearly gates behold, thy bulwarks with salvation strong and streets of shining gold. They enter into compacts to meet each other at the fountain, anticipate their sweet communions while reclining on our green and flowery banks, or resting beneath the shadow of the tree of life. They revel in the glory which will be theirs when they gather at the river, speculate as to what they will do when they stand among that company which no man can number, every member of which will wear a golden crown while their hands shall bear the victor's palm or strike the strings of a sweeter harp than David ever played. Yet they would be seriously shocked if anyone was to tell them that all these things were really in existence here, and charge you with blasphemy, trying to make heaven a place as gross and material as earth. Their only conception of our present state of being reaching no further than that we are continually flying about in a cloudless ether singing glory, 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 and have not so much as an empty cloud upon which to find repose, and that this unceasing flying and singing is our eternal rest. However, I must leave you at this grove until our friend Kushner shall arrive, when he will show you many points of interest and instruction. While he had been talking we were retracing our steps, and had now arrived at a magnificent grove of trees towards which waved his hand, as if my new conductor was to be expected that direction. I am very grateful for all the information you have given me, I exclaimed, as he took me in a brotherly embrace, preparatory to leaving, but may I ask one more question before you go? With pleasure, he replied. Will you explain to me why I have been able to ascend so far above my own condition as to gain the sight you have shown me, while that poor woman was compelled to return until she had found her own? Yes. Messengers or teachers have the power and are permitted to lend of their strength to those to whom they minister and thus help them to reach superior heights. Occasionally look upon those things which await them in the future. This stimulates new aspirations and insights to further progress. The limit to which I was enabled to carry you was reached at the point where we turned, but that was high enough to make you understand something more of the power of love operating in another direction for the purpose of continually raising up the whole community towards God. With this he bade me God, speed till we met again, and, turning, left me like a lightning flash and I was once more alone but my heart was glad. Chapter 5 The Home of Rest. One of the great charms of this life is the singular appositeness of every event to the time and place of its occurrence. Wish and desire are very closely interwoven with the opportunity for their gratification. Almost the first communication made to me after my arrival was that I should find it to be a land of surprises. Now that I had time for a little thought and reflection, one of the chief of these was found in the perfectly natural condition of everything, physical, intellectual and spiritual. This was in nothing more emphatically noticeable than in my inclination and surroundings the moment after I had lost my guide and companion. While he was present, all my powers were on the qui vive both to see and hear the lessons he exerted himself to unfold, and these succeeding each other with such amazing rapidity left me no time for anything more than crude appropriation, while my memory was called upon to store them hurriedly for more mature consideration and reflection by and by. How much food for calm digestion I had thus acquired, I had not even time to think, though doubtless it was fully known to my instructor, and his departure was due to the necessity for me to pause and see how far I had travelled in the pilgrimage of knowledge from the point where I had first made his acquaintance. At all events, my first idea when left alone was that nothing could be so welcome to me as the one opportunity now within my reach. In the olden life, when my soul wished to throw itself before the majesty of the infinite, and the quiet country lay beyond my reach, I would turn to Westminster Abbey, and surrounded by the matchless beauty of its nave, where stone and harmony, poetry and architecture, symmetry and history are blended in such unparalleled design, throw restriction to the winds, and soar upwards on the wings of the hallowed associations which bathed the abbey like a benediction. I asked no preacher to direct my thoughts, since the memories of a thousand years discoursed within the pulpit of my breast. I sought no choir or organ, for, in the arches and triforium, lingered the echoing cadences of jubilate and miseria sung by pious monks in centuries passed by. I wished to join no congregation save that of those great and noble examples whose bodies lay beneath my feet. Alone in such silent grandeur, in the presence of the peace of death, where the sunbeams falling through the clerestory windows seemed like ladders dropped by angels whence the souls of saints might climb to heaven, my heart was free to make its full confession and hear the absolution whispered in the silence of that house of prayer. It may be that in some of those seasons of reverie and renunciation Erasmus has found a place among the angels and ministering spirits which surrounded me unseen, or perhaps when meditating on the many things I fail to understand, with the mantle of night around me and a canopy of stars above, he may have carried one of my many prayers for light and guidance upward, and thus have learned the habit of my soul communion with the accessories most congenial to that state of mind. Who can tell? It might be so, or, on the other hand, it might be due to that natural adaptation of everything to each other to which I have referred. Whichever it was, one thing is certain, the desire for contemplation and the discovery of the one place most calculated to enhance my wish were simultaneous revelations, for the scene of my reflection was a combination of both my favored haunts. I have said it was a grove or avenue leading at right angles from the path whereon we had been walking, a gentle descent a mile or more in length, formed of stately trees so planted that their branches held each other in kindly embraces. Overhead a roof more exquisite in architectural beauty than even that of Westminster, the leaves like glass transparent, lending an added softness to the sun as they passed its beams through into the sanctuary which wooed me. The emerald carpet reflected the glory which seemed inarticulate with invitation to enter and gather up the harvest of hope deferred, and reap the hundredfold fruition of all the sighs and prayers which met with no response on earth. This invitation was too welcome just then for me to refuse, so I turned from out the open path into that soft retreat of melody and repose. Above my head the leaves rustled in rhythmic lullabies, At my feet the flowers found voice and wooed my soul in love, songs of perfume. In the distance I could hear cascades of water adding their soft and refreshing music to the harmony, while the caroling notes of winged songsters first made me conscious of the fact that birds, as well as men, find in paradise a continuation of their earth existence. The grove ran through the center of what may be called a garden park, well stocked with large and luxuriant trees, somewhat low in growth, compared with the avenue itself, but having far, reaching arms like oaks or chestnuts, beneath which were beautiful beds of flowers or mosses, whereon numbers of people were reclining. Many others were walking to and fro with that languid, careful gait naturally assumed in the first days of exercise after sickness. Others again, were resting on the numerous seats dotted about the grass, as if although their strength was not yet so far regained as to allow of walking, yet so reposing they were drawing a first invigoration from the life, giving aroma of the breezes which fanned them. The whole aspect of the place was that of a convalescent home, and I could not perceive any incongruity in the thought that such places could serve a useful purpose to the weary and heavy, laden souls of earth, to rest and recoup themselves after the prostration of life's fitful fever. The possibility of this made me glad, as well as offered more food for reflection, and seeing a vacant patch of moss beneath the branches of a wide, spreading tree, I threw myself upon it, without a question as to the right and propriety of so doing, and gave myself up to contemplation. I cannot say how long my reverie continued, or that the course my thoughts pursued was very definite and consecutive. I was most conscious of the fact that I was resting, not merely enjoying one of those brief lulls overwrought strength demanded for recuperation, and which was so frequently forced upon me in the other life, but I was filled with a sense of returning vigor and youth, carrying with at first the suggestion, then a continually increasing certainty, that the reel of life was being rapidly turned backward, as it were, and that I was regaining the robust health for so many years waning away. It was a surprising, a delightful experience, and I yielded myself to it readily and gratefully. I lay in a state of semi-enchantment, every moment brought some new sensation, and a thousand capabilities seemed to be on the point of unfolding within me, of which I had been unconscious, had never dreamed of before. Strange feelings supervened, as if bands were snapping, restrictions giving way, and my soul enlarging, expanded and rejoiced in its new, found freedom. I no longer felt I was the victim of circumstances, for all contending influences had been withdrawn, and something whispered that their absence was not a temporary cessation in the struggle, but that I had secured a victory final and complete. The state of mind engendered by all these revelations can neither be described nor appreciated by those who have not passed through the blissful experience. Every cell in my soul labored to absorb the overpowering revelation, every avenue in my being drank, and drinking, still thirsted for the life, exulting stream which overflowed me, every fiber in my body thrilled and trembled under the sweet new functions it was called upon to perform. While I was thus half intoxicated with the exquisite pleasures in which I bathed, the very air playing around me seemed to be peopled with a hundred fairy voices which cried, "Yield, yield!" And, nothing loath, I threw myself in fearless abandonment into their embraces and lost my consciousness in the rejuvenating sleep of paradise. I have no idea how long that sleep continued, since time in this new life is measured by result achieved and not by revolutions of the sun or dial. All I can say is that when I woke I found all the transformations which had induced the slumber in their commencement had been completed. The furrows had been kissed away from my face, the silver threads in my hair eliminated, the fountain of weariness within me had been dried up, while all the new powers and capabilities were so blended and dove-tailed into my being, that through the same old consciousness and recollection remained, the same individuality with its loves, its hopes, and aspirations. I was equally aware that a new and enlarged nature had been added by those mysterious influences at work upon me, a nature invulnerable alike to weariness and disappointment. Perhaps one of my strangest experiences of this life occurred at this moment. I had scarcely aroused myself from the power of that slumber, when I felt that it was leaving me, never more to return. How I knew this I cannot tell, yet the certainty of the fact could not be denied. Pain, doubt, disappointment and the hundred other sensations of earth with which we are familiarized as being peculiar to the body, it is easy to tear oneself from, and the partings brings with it a degree of satisfaction. But sleep is different.